You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Are we entering the next commodity super cycle? If one looks at returns that South African investors have been exposed to locally, that's the average annually over the last 5 years. The JSE All Shares delivered 6%, barely beating inflation. Cash, 7%. Bonds, much more respectable, 10%. Property, minus 8%. Financials, minus 1%. And the standout, resources, 23% annually for the last 5 years. It really has been a one-horse race. Resources, mining houses up 100%, bonds up 10% over the period. And as we start the new year, commodity prices, both soft and hard, remain extremely robust. Softs are benefiting from an increased focus on food security into coronavirus lockdowns and droughts in South America. Plus, the Chinese are rebuilding their swine herd. And hard commodities continue to see tailwinds from amazing supply restraint and disruptions, coupled with decent demand as global growth rebounds and politicians everywhere look to infrastructure to catalyze domestic growth. We've also got the so-called greenification of the world, an oft underappreciated theme when it comes to commodities. The energy transition is actually very intensive for commodity usage. So what can we expect for 2021? Let's invite our panelists today. René Hochreiter, mining analyst at Noah Capital Markets. Andres Rousseau, PwC's Africa Energy Utilities and Resources Leader. And Peter Major, mining analyst at Mergent. Andres, kick us off and talk out there is that we are heading into another commodity super cycle. I'm not sure if I buy that just yet, but broadly, set the macro scene for commodities this year.
Michael, we've seen after the 2008 financial crisis that a lot of focus was put on commodities to get the economy back up and running. At that point in time, it really ran for 3-4 years up to post 2012, 2013. And it seems to be happening again this time. China has already committed in a big way to spend on infrastructure development. That's got big demand for commodities. It's got big demand for energy. And therefore, we are likely to see some very positive movements in the commodity space.
Peter Major, if you look at it, China expected to grow a whopping 9.1% this year. I don't know how they've done it, but they seem to have really rebounded remarkably quickly from this COVID crisis. And that's surely going to fuel proper demand for a whole range of commodities.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much this demand is growth or if it's just fueled by money that we've never seen before. I think the Reagan administration proved you don't bring down the world by just printing lots of money if you're one of the major countries. And we proved it again under the Bush administration in the new millennium. And so now it's pretty accepted, certainly in the States. You can print unlimited money if you want to, and it doesn't really change the status quo for the negative. It actually makes status quo better. And so I'm not saying you've doubled the world supply of money the last 12 months, but if you've added $12 trillion, you've certainly added 25%. So I think a lot of these commodity prices were knee-jerk. Certainly the gold price, it was just knee-jerk. You know, you've added 25-35% to the amount of cash sloshing around. So naturally, all fixed commodities should be up 25-30%. If you look at oil, you know, oil's only a little above its long-term average. I think that's about $50. So oil's at 55. But things like coal are way above their average. Things like natural gas are a standard deviation out of there. So I think a lot of that is knee-jerk. And you're right, Michael, earlier you were saying you're not going to have supply constraints with those kind of prices. Without a doubt, you're not going to. I mean, the shale oil guys, they can live very well at $55 oil. I don't know a coal miner not making money at current coal prices. And natural gas, mamma mia. I think there's no way I can see any of these commodity prices being where they are at the end of the year. They're just too high, and there will be a supply response.
René, what's your view from the broad macro perspective before we dive into PGMs?
I tend to go along with the idea that we are sort of starting a new super cycle. I mean, the story's been around for about 2 or 3 or 4 months now. But the rebound in China is just, you know, too strong to actually be a false rebound. I think, you know, China is still talking about the Silk Road. They're talking about 30 cities between Beijing and Paris. It's going to take a lot of steel, iron ore, coal, the energy to produce all those materials. The effect of COVID, which has made people start shunning public transport, and you know, first time buyers of new cars is at an all time high, especially in China. It might spill over to other parts of the world, but the I think maybe I'm being a little bit too bullish, but if I look at just my forecasts for the PGM prices going forward, I mean, if rhodium is just a hair's breadth under $20,000 an ounce, if I run that plus all the other PGM prices plus the rand through the basket price formula, it's just under one and a half million rand per kilogram. Only a year ago, that basket price revenue on the 19th of January exceeded 1 million rand a kilogram for the first time. 1 year later, it's 50% up. Going through my forecasts, I see it by 2024 being 2 million rand a kilogram. If I run those sort of numbers through my my models, the cash generation, the dividend yields, the free cash flow yields are just enormous for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. So maybe there is a little bit of truth about the super cycle starting up. Obviously, I could be wrong. But the way I see it at the moment, the outlook for commodities is super strong.
And we'll come back to rhodium in particular. I mean, up 17% year to date, as you mentioned, within a breadth of $20,000 an ounce, and that's after tripling last year. And just to get a better understanding of what's driving rhodium within that basket. But before we get there, I think a big part of the commodity conversation at the moment, Andries, is what's happening, broadly speaking, when it comes to the energy transition. And a lot's been spoken about decarbonizing the global energy system. But that's not going to happen overnight. And we've certainly seen coal prices have been quite firm. There isn't a lot of investment into new coal. What is your outlook for those commodities, that those hydrocarbon commodities like coal and oil that are supposed to be displaced by renewables? When is that likely to happen? And what's the outlook for coal in particular?
Yeah, coal obviously very relevant for our country and therefore very important. I agree that the energy transition is certainly firmly in place, and that will happen. But what we are seeing is that growth in new energy added to this system is coming from renewables and less so from our hydrocarbons, coal and oil. It doesn't mean that there's a drop-off in demand for coal. And we are seeing that coal will probably remain at current demand levels for the next 10 years or so before it really starts dropping off. It's probably fair to say that it'll never reach the heights that we had in 2019 in terms of coal demand. But going forward, even at stable demand, the fact that our production will start tapering off, the fact that we are putting lots of measures in place in order to stop new production coming on stream, environmental rules, financing not coming from banks, it certainly places pressure on the supply side. And therefore, I think in the next couple of years, there's certainly a bit of upside on the coal price. Now, in order for us to benefit from that in our country, well, obviously logistics need to be right and sorted out, and we need to be in a position to export coal. We've had, and perhaps that's part of the reason for Richards Bay coal prices going up, but we've had inability from TFR to get coal to the market. And it'll be interesting to see how that play out in the COVID-impacted world in the next year.
To attach on to that, Peter, for so long now, you and others have been speaking about our lack of competitiveness in South Africa, be it regulatory, be it structural around logistics, be it energy and Eskom and all of those input prices. Do you see anything to give you confidence that this current administration is grabbing this competitiveness bull by the horns?
No, because unfortunately, the current administration can't really grab anything by the horns. It's in too much disarray, unfortunately. They've let pandemonium go on too long. They let everybody do what they wanted too long. So even if you've got a little bit of will at the top, you don't have the ability. They don't have the ability to fix any of these things. And even worse now, they don't have the money and they don't have the credibility of attracting help to do it. So that's a bad position to be in. You know, if you don't have those three, how are you going to fix ESKOM? You don't have the money to fix it, and you've got double the employees you need, and they're used to doing their own thing for 20 years. Now somebody at the top tells them, hey, shape up. You know, how do you shape up? How do you get fit when you've been drinking, smoking, and partying for 25 years? Even if you have the will, you don't have the ability. Now, fortunately, our mining industry is tough. They've had to be very independent. First of all, they cut off during sanctions era, and that they could manage, but they really got cut off in the 90s and the new millennium. Not only did they get cut off, which they can handle, but they were attacked. They were attacked relentlessly by the unions, by the government on regulations, the money bill. And then 10 years after Mandela sat on the steps saying, we're taking over the country, but we're not going to nationalize, they did an about-face double-cross and they nationalized. So the mining industry is resilient. They withstood all of that. So this weakened position of ESKOM, this piss-poor state of Transnet, water affairs, if anybody can handle it, the mining industry can. Look at how they've handled COVID. Mm. They've handled TB. They've handled. Mm. So they can handle it. But hey, they're all wary about growing here. Just ask Neil Froneman, how much growth are you going to do in South Africa? Yeah. They don't want to waste that money growing here because it could be taken away. So they're going to take all the dividends they can out. They're going to keep what they've got going because they're on super profit margins. And that's not bad, but we need growth in this country. And the mining industry is too shell-shocked to grow after being attacked relentlessly on all sides by all parties for 30 years.
We've got a world awash with money, 25% new money minted in the US last year. We've got China said to grow at 9.1% this year. We've got countries around the world throwing money at infrastructure to get their economies growing again after COVID-19. What's not to like about the macro conditions for commodities this year? And let's just zoom in, René, on PGMs, and they really have been the standout over the last few years in South Africa and globally. Rhodium surging to within a whisker of $20,000 an ounce, up 17% year to date, tripled in 2020. What's driving rhodium to these levels?
Michael, I see it's just broken 20,000. It's $20,200 an ounce now. That's a Johnson Matthey price. What is driving it is a massive shortfall in rhodium, and one needs about 0.7 grams of rhodium in a catalyst to meet the China 6 requirements. That was from about 2 years ago, that was a sevenfold increase in the amount of rhodium you needed to comply with China 6 and also Euro 6. There are no stocks of rhodium. The only significant rhodium producer in the world is South Africa. The best rhodium producer, the highest grade and the biggest recovery in rhodium is the old Lonmin mine, which is now Sibanye. It is also a very nervous part of the world to source a metal that you really need. If, for example, in China, if you don't meet the rules and regulations, you actually get arrested. So what's happening there, I think the Chinese are paying up. They've never been really sophisticated in terms of using, derivatives to manage your supply of this particular metal anyway. So they tend to pay up. They have to have the metal. They need the metal to and they, as everyone knows, the car industry is booming. It recovered much quicker than anybody else from the COVID crisis we had last year.
René, when do we get to a point where the price pushes greater urgency in terms of looking for alternative to rhodium in catalytic converters and the ability of manufacturers to retool?
The only substitute that you can have for rhodium is platinum or palladium. Unfortunately, platinum or palladium are seven times less efficient than rhodium. Therefore, you multiply the platinum or the palladium price by 7 and see if you get close to the rhodium price, and then you take a decision whether it's worth substituting or not. I don't think if you multiply the palladium price by 7, you get to about $17,000-$18,000 an ounce, which is not that different from $20,000 an ounce. So there's no point. However, if there is a situation where there just isn't enough rhodium around anymore, there will be no alternative than to maybe go into to use platinum or whatever palladium is still out there to make that switch.
Peter, what is the risk to this? Because it sounds almost too good to be true. If you're a shareholder in a company that is producing rhodium at the moment, and you think of the Sibanyes and the Amplatzes of this world, it sounds too good to be true.
The risk is always legislative risk. Yeah, and politicians are loose cannons, huh? It's like giving a psychopath your car, a shotgun, and a credit card. You don't know what he's going to do. So. And China's run by engineers, they're not psychopaths, but engineers can calculate. If they see that they're paying a crazy price and they still can't make their requirements, what's to stop China from reversing their Clean Air Act? Say, let's go back to number 5 for a year or two until things settle down. You know, why should we make South Africa rich? Why should we make Stillwater Platinum in America rich? So that's always been my worry, and I think as a fund manager, you know what legislative changes can do. You wake up one day, and they just legislate something in or something out. And it can work to your advantage and it can work to your disadvantage. And I think the market's already showing that. Most of these platinum shares are now coming off relative to the all share. And they're not coming off because earnings are going down. Earnings are going up. They're coming off just because the risk is too high that there could be a legislative knee-jerk reaction. And as Rennie said, you can swap it for platinum. And as Peter Major says, you can just change the legislation overnight, you know, to some kind of hiatus, some kind of reverse. Just say all legislation nil and void until we say otherwise. That's the risk. And I think the platinum companies, I know a couple personally pretty well, they realize that risk, and that's why they're diversifying. That's why they're spending money on looking at other commodities, other deposits. Now's the time to diversify. You got a fat balance sheet. Your ratings are high. You can actually issue scrip at a rate much higher than you could for the last 5 or 10 years. So I think we got the most mature people, experienced, wise people running most of our mining companies that I've seen in 30, 40 years. They're not just embarking on capital projects that need these kind of prices to survive. They're actually looking, where do we put the money so if there's a worst case scenario, we've locked in some of this benefit.
And that's certainly been a standout, I think, across the board, Andres, is this, notwithstanding these sort of super cycle level share prices, miners have shown the inclination to restrain themselves from doing major M&A deals at the top of the cycle, which certainly highlighted the end of the last commodity super cycle towards the end of the mid-2000s. What are the sort of challenges and opportunities, shall we say, for capital allocation within this environment? I think Peter mentioned one already for the platinum miners, they can diversify. What do you see as some of the challenges and opportunities?
Yeah, Michael, so 2016, when the cycle was really at the low, capital allocation, there was no capital. Everything went to settling debt. Those balance sheets have been sorted out well and truly. The next level has been all to repatriating fund to shareholders. So dividends has gone up, which is a capital decision in essence. Now that shareholders are getting those fair returns, the question is whether they will reinvest or not. We are not seeing the big deals, certainly not scrip or cash deals at these high levels. And capital investment in new mines have been at I want to say all-time lows, at least 15-year lows in the last 2 years. So the challenge of bringing on supply in the mining industry is it doesn't happen overnight. And I do believe there will be value in putting money in the ground. Well, that's certainly what we need in this country for the long run, because we need that in order to supply into the demand that there will be out there for some time. And not at these ludicrous prices that Peter has mentioned. But clearly, you need to make sensible decisions at sensible long-term prices. Our mining industry is very mature in that sense, the leadership, and therefore there's been remarkable restraint in terms of making decisions that will pay off even at lower prices, long-term sustainable type investments.
I've got a very interesting chart in front of me here, René, which has a look at the mining company share prices and their over or under performance relative to the basket of commodities that they produce. And the platinum miners are trading at substantial discounts to those baskets. If you look at Amplats, 102%, RB Plat 76%, Implat 74%, Northam 68%. Is this just all because of this fear about what potentially politicians might do in terms of imposing super taxes or changing the rules of the game?
I think it's in the nature of a fund manager to be cautious. Even late last year, I was in a meeting with a whole lot of fund managers, and the share prices were saying that that was the top of the market at that point in time. Your chart probably shows the same thing at the moment. I think, you know, people are tend to be wary at the top of, not that I'm saying it's the top of the market already, but fund managers, you know, they run other people's money. So you have to be a little bit cautious, and you take some profits if you can, and, you know, wait for the, and I'm pretty sure that these prices will not persist for another month or 2 or 3 months. They'll come down. What I'm looking at, for example, for a floor price, and I think that's a safer sort of a parameter to use, a floor price for rhodium of about $15,000 an ounce, palladium, and obviously platinum lower than that as well. You know, public opinion is that, or fund manager opinion is that these shares are too high. Let's just take some profits, bank it, and see. Let's give it a month or two and see what happens.
If I may add, the reality is prices have gone up, but costs have also gone up by much more than inflation for the mining companies, and that's input costs related to electricity in our environment. But a big portion of the input costs in the mining industry is commodity based as well, and therefore, when you've got an increase in commodity prices, your revenue side goes up, but your inflation input cost goes up as well, and that reduced margins. So margins certainly don't go up by the same amount that the revenue prices have gone up.
Absolutely.
And I think that's another very important part of discipline in this environment, is that you should never lose the focus on cost, unit cost, that has to be maintained, and I hope that our mining companies do maintain that focus.
We haven't had any time to talk about gold, and obviously what's happening with inflation over in the US is stoking fears. There does seem to be a global reflation trade happening, and that hasn't been supportive of gold, which is probably, if you look at the charts, been in a bearish pattern for about the last 3 or 4 months. But just as we end this off, I want to go around the panel. If you had R1 million of your own money to be chucking into a commodity or a basket of commodities, where would you be putting that? Peter, let's start with you.
Man, I've been racking my brain for the last month on this. I don't know. But if I look at the Rand gold price, our Kruger Rand, it has done nothing but fall relative to the Aussie for the last 12 months. You know, gold shot up there at March, and it overperformed. April overperformed, May, and then it's been coming back. So if I look at my graphs today, gold relative to the Aussie is exactly at the mean of about the last 25 years. So if you were going to buy a Kruger Rand now, you're buying it at better value than in the last 12 months. And if the gold price doesn't go up much in the next couple of months or years, the odds are the Rand is going to. So yeah, I almost think I'd sit on some Kruger Rands here. Look, I have said half my pension money was put into the platinum ETF, and I would still leave a quarter of it in that platinum ETF because it still looks cheap relative to gold. But yeah, Gold right now, you know, it's at a 25-year mean with the Aussie, and I think I'd rather hold some Kruger Rands now than I would at the Aussie at these inflated PE levels.
Andres?
We haven't discussed copper, and I think that's an interesting one for the table. With electrification, it's always a safe bet, but I think there's real risk on the supply side. In the COVID environment, where the socioeconomic environment in the countries that mine copper is really challenging and battling, I think there's real risk of closing down some of production, and that could push copper in a big way. So we think DRC, Latin America, we've seen mines being closed, or at least production sales being stopped out of Peru. I think copper could be a very interesting one for the next year.
Kruger Rand, Dr. Copper, some platinum ETFs. René?
I'd probably go for the platinum ETF, a platinum metal. it's been lagging, you know, the other precious metals for a number of years now. It hasn't caught up. I mean, it used to be at parity and it used to be at a premium to gold in 3 or 4 years ago. That hasn't happened. I think it could happen again going forward. The problem is there's a bit of a stockpile of above ground stocks and platinum still out there, which could actually help the whole industry, you know, to stop the prices going through the roof. I'd probably say maybe 50% into platinum, and then just in case gold goes above 2,000 and starts heading towards 2,300 and maybe even 2,500, I see some other forecasters saying even 3,000. I don't think that is really going to happen. I think it will trundle upwards. So I'd put 50% into gold.
Well, there we have it, folks. René Hochreiter, mining analyst at NOAH Capital Markets, Andries Rousseau, PwC's Africa Energy Utilities and Resources Lead, and Peter Major, mining analyst at Mergence, with your resource roundtable to kick off 2021.